welcome to Michigan HockeyCast 4.21, where we're ending banner droughts. Alex, I guess being a blogger, your schedule is not going to be like everyone else's because you do things at different times because, one, you can, and two, sometimes it makes sense given what you actually do. But after the game on Saturday, it was dinner time for you, despite being 10:30 to 11 o'clock. And as you're driving to get your food or attempt one to get your food, you had a random song be played in your car that you swear you did not choose, even though I am suspicious.
No, I did not. Well, number one, it's got the, you can look at the image that I sent you. It was on the Sirius XM radio. You don't choose what's on Sirius XM radio.
Well, you're good with Photoshop.
Yeah. And it was, We Are the Champions popped up on the Sirius XM radio. While I was in the drive-thru at the McDonald's, which, by the way, turns out they didn't have any employees, which is another conversation. But what I was going to bring up about that is I pulled into the line and I was waiting behind three or four cars, and there were three or four cars in front of me in both of the two lines for the drive-thru. And I sat there about 2.5 minutes with no one moving. And then this car pulled up to the side of me, parked parallel to my car. And so then I looked over and realized that car was probably trying to talk to me. So I rolled down my window and the lady in the car says, I work here. It's closed. And I said, okay. But then I'm thinking to myself, then why were the cars in front of me? How long were they sitting? Isn't there an amount of time that you sit at the little speaker thing? And if no one comes on it, then you realize that they're closed. Like,
I mean, I'm probably not sitting there for more than 5 seconds, maybe 10 seconds. Then I'm going to be like, hello, is anyone in there? I mean, the lights are on.
But those cars were sitting there in front of me for the whole time I was there, and they were there before me. So they must have been there 5 or 10 minutes. And at some point when you've been there 5 minutes and no one is coming on the speaker, I would think at some point, you would realize that no one is coming.
You just pull up and you're just, well, they'll address me eventually. I'll just sit here and get on my phone. And then you've played 10 games of cards on your phone and you're like, no one has said hello to me yet. So you got to preempt the whole, well, or I should say that you got to enjoy the entire situation with the We Are the Champions song.
Yeah.
So in probably the most like randomly enjoyable way.
Yeah, it made the fiasco in the drive-thru a little bit better.
Well, we did not use that song on this podcast for other hopeful reasons. Maybe in a couple weeks. Hopefully in a couple weeks. First, we have to talk about Saturday's game, which was we said last week after Notre Dame that was the best game Michigan had played, but this is also right up there. Like, there were a couple of stretches where it was like, all right, this isn't the best play I've seen, but for long stretches of the game, I don't know, I felt more or less comfortable.
Yeah, Michigan goes up 4-1 in the second period against Minnesota, and that's kind of the point where you're sort of wondering, okay, what's going to happen now? Obviously, certain NHL teams are famous for choking in 4-1 situations. But what I'll say about that is that Michigan really got through that last 28 or 29, 30 minutes without a lot of problems, really, until the very end of the game where there were a bunch of penalties and a lot of weird stuff happening. But, it was a 4-1 win, but it was a lot more lopsided in terms of the way the game actually unfolded.
Well, and sort of given the context of this situation and like where the team has been playing, like it was going to take a collapse. Like the way the defense has been legit good now for a while. They had a couple of bobbles against Notre Dame in South Bend, but even before that, pretty much all second half of the season, they've been in lockdown mode more or less. And even against like the good teams or the scoring teams or whatever. So, I mean, once they get to that point, and then even behind that, you have Portillo, who's, you know, we've talked about him ad nauseum in this, on this hockey cast, but like they were, it was going to take some like fluky stuff, or it was going to take like the weirdest bounces, which, you know, I mean, Portillo always gave one away in like one of the most comical potential goals, but it just like, I'm not worried, I guess, as much like, you know, like basketball gets up or whatever, and you're like, uh-oh, or like, you know, football, even in different, like throughout the entire Ohio State game, you know, they're playing better than Ohio State, and they, you know, maybe are better than Ohio State, but you're like, this can't, no, there's absolutely no way. We can get three scores and this isn't going to happen.
Well, that was about, you know, that game is influenced more by the supernatural circumstances in which it was taking place and all of the, you know, the history and all that stuff, right? Michigan beat Minnesota the last time they played. So this wasn't like some Herculean thing that we're trying to summit.
Sure, but they, I mean, it's what, 7 years of Big Ten play, and they have one banner either in the regular season or in the postseason. And
sure,
you know, and it's on the road, and there apparently are like 10,000 Gopher fans for the first time ever in this arena, which hope you guys enjoyed that. But like, I don't know, this team, like, we're going to enter, like we've been talking, they've entered a couple weeks ago elimination hockey, and now it's like, you know, losing your done hockey for forever. But like, they're in as good a place. They're playing as good as they can. I mean, there's not a lot of things where I'd be like, well, man, I wish we would have shored this up.
Yeah, I mean, they did well at the trade deadline. So,
which is today or yesterday.
Someday in the future, yeah. Or in the past. Anyway, no, I mean, they're playing really well. I pulled out the numbers last night and was kind of comparing them, and they look on the stat sheet very similar to the 2008 Michigan team in pretty much at every category. 2008 gave up a few less shots on goal per game. 2022 has marginally better goaltending in terms of save percentage. That's really the only difference. Otherwise, all the other numbers are very, very similar. And, you know, you get a number one seed for the first time in 10 years. Number one overall seed for the first time in 14 years. So it's kind of a watershed team. You have to be pretty, you know, old to, you know, have really firm memories of 2008. So,
or just not have graduated a year ago. Yeah. But I mean, so this is what this team was supposed to be. I mean, we've talked about this too, but you know, I wrote in the 21 tournament preview, you know, they get that region of death and you're like, yeah, maybe they can beat Duluth, but can they beat Duluth and North Dakota? They probably come up short at some point along the way. And, you know, you're disappointed, but you kind of understand because the team is super young. And this year they bring everybody back when, you know, arguably some of these guys maybe wouldn't have needed to come back, and they get, and then you add in four pretty good freshmen. I think all of them have been very, very good. And you're just like, that's the staging year and this is the launch year. And then they're going to be the number one seed. And that's what they did. And here we are. I mean, this is go time.
Yeah. This Michigan team has played really well the whole season. And I mean, when you look at, for example, this Michigan team, you know, throughout the year and what their ranking was, throughout the year, you know, they checked in, I believe, at number two today in the USCHO poll. And so you just scroll through the year, number three, number one, number two, number four, number three, number six, number four, number three, number four, number three, number two, number five, number four, and now back to number two. I mean, that's top six wire to wire and all but 1 or 2 weeks in the top five. So that's kind of been what it's been all year long, but they're also playing a lot better in the second half. They are 15-2-1 in the 18 games since the start of 2022. And one of those two regulation losses probably should have gone to regulation if not for extenuating circumstances. So this team is playing extremely well right now. And they, you know, you just look at these four games in the Big Ten tournament. They played four excellent games. They gave up two total 5-on-5 goals in the four games they played 240 minutes of hockey, and they scored four goals or more in three of those four games. So hard to top that.
Yep. And that's where you need to be at this point. So the game on Saturday, like it's kind of weird to put it in context because, you know, we're watching the basketball game and the basketball game gets delayed like over a half an hour. And then, you know, somewhere in the second half, you're kind of starting to fade because Michigan's starting to look poorly. And, you know, you're kind of glancing at the clock and hockey puck drop is coming up. And then all of a sudden, like Eli Brooks comes along and Hunter Dickinson and everybody just makes plays and we're getting wound up and then they end up winning the game and you're kind of going crazy. And I look at the clock and it's like 7:58. And I was like, oh, I got to get my laptop. And I'm like, you know, running around with it like a chicken with your head cut off because you're trying to be able to manage all this stuff. So you get everything set up, you're kind of paying attention. And before you can even think, like, two goals are already in the net. You're just like, whoa, you know, like on this first shift of the game, Michigan dumps the puck in, eventually goes for a change. And, you know, we rewound this like four times to figure out what happened. It's maybe a little on Power, maybe a little bit on Pearson, maybe a little bit on why is anyone going for a change 30 seconds into the game. But Minnesota gets a breakaway, forehand, backhand. Portillo goes for the poke check, doesn't get it. And it's 1-0 Minnesota. You're like, whoa, that's like a hard crash down from just, you know, advancing to the Sweet 16 in basketball 3 minutes ago.
Well, it was definitely quite the start to the game. I don't know why on that play they were already going for a change 30 seconds into the game. That didn't make a lot of sense to me. The play is really where a person comes in at the blue line and pinches down a little bit, and then the supporting forwards go off. But it's still not really an excuse for Power to lose the guy behind him. That's just
he did have two guys, didn't he?
Yeah, he might have. It was also a nice stretch pass. The thing I really didn't like about the play was Portillo going for the poke check, because when you go for the poke check on a breakaway like that, it's a do or die play.
Yeah.
Right? You either make it or you miss, and then you are on your belly and the entire net is exposed. As opposed to if he doesn't go for the poke check and he's just sliding either on his skates or on his knees, he takes up so much of the net, right? Like for me, when you go down for the poke check, you leave the net open. Whereas if you don't do that, you take up most of the net. And I'd rather have him be taking up most of the net than, you know, making this do or die sort of roll the dice type play.
Yeah. No, that doesn't make sense. And Michigan has used his size in their defensive structure to their advantage, as, you know, when teams start taking shots from the boards, I mean, you're just like, go ahead and shoot. I mean, it's tough getting it through Mount Portillo, but Michigan does respond essentially almost right away, maybe on the next shift or two, probably the next shift, because I think it was within 45 seconds that they get the puck behind the net and it starts to come out. It's held in. Then you have Beniers along the goal line, which he fakes out. I think it was it Lacombe? I can't remember. I can't remember.
No, it was Brock.
It was Faber. It was Faber. Faber's like gets loose, comes down. Beniers gets by him and then dishes to Rahsaan in the slot, who kind of keeps it on the ice inside the far post. And it's 1-1. That was also kind of a goofy play from Ryan Johnson. So, you know, two of Minnesota's top four defensemen there with a little sloppy in their own end.
Yep. Michigan has one of their NHL defensemen be among the culprits on a goal, and then it kind of comes back the other way with Minnesota sort of having the same thing happen. So, you know, the teams more or less get even, and, you know, that kind of settles the game down, and it was really the turning point of the game because it didn't allow Minnesota to have really any point in the game where they felt like they were leading, because that lead was there and then it was gone in the flash of a second, and you never really got an equilibrium where Minnesota is the defensive team trying to control and protect the lead. So, and it just gave a jolt into the Michigan bench and it got everyone going. And then once it got to 1-1, the game started to kind of settle in for about 15 minutes where each team was getting some chances and then it was kind of lively.
Well, this was probably like the shakiest stretch for Michigan because they were giving up some chances. They gave up a 2-on-1. They end up giving up a 3-on-2. There was like a big save that Portillo had to make coming out in front. And, you know, we kind of were discussing a little bit on the MGO podcast and just ourselves before with, you know, is Michigan sort of struggling to like adjust to the Olympic size ice? Because obviously in Minnesota, they have Olympic size ice. It's happened before where in the first game, when Michigan goes there, when they used to go to Northern, you know, just getting your bearings and getting your spacing right, making sure that, you know, because all the margins are going to be different. And it just kind of felt like, you know, okay, they gave up a few opportunities that probably were due to, you know, just not being used to playing on that big of a rink for a few minutes anyway.
Yeah. I just realized this. Going back to the thing I said earlier, the week that Michigan dropped to number 6 in the poll was after the GLI incident. So I'm going to say that when the voters were acting rationally and not very upset about off-ice situations, Michigan was in the top 5 all year long. But anyway. Yeah, the Olympic ice, right, you have more space to cover as a defenseman. You know, when you want to push the play to the perimeter, then they do have more room to work on the perimeter. So that sometimes forces you to play even farther over. And then that leaves a lane in the middle of the ice. It's hard because they don't play enough games on Olympic ice to really notice the differences. Michigan yeah. plays 3 games a year, 2 games a year, depending on it. So it's a plausible explanation. I would just say that, in part, that really all happened when Michigan was tied. And when you're tied, you know, perhaps you're taking a few more chances to get the go-ahead goal, that sort of thing. Whereas once they get the lead, then it really kind of changes on its head.
Yeah. I do. On one more note that you even brought up during the game, in this stretch, while Michigan's defensemen, you know, Hughes ended up having like a kind of a bad neutral zone turnover that kind of led to a chance too. So it wasn't just like in their own end, their defensemen weren't playing the best. But what you had said at the time was that their forwards were playing really well back checking and coming back to not just like lift sticks and everything, but come back to get into passing lanes and deflect pucks. And that was another thing that sort of saw Michigan through this is that and that's sort of been a keystone for Michigan in the last few weeks, at least defensively, is their forwards are coming back. And it's not just like, oh, Owen Power go, you know, move somebody off the puck or Hughes needs to skate it away or Pearson Truscott needs to slam somebody or whatever. It's, you know, you get Mike Pasta coming back and Johnny Beecher and guys like that are back in, you know, tying up a guy and not putting stress on anyone. And they bailed Michigan out, I think, at least 2 or 3 times just in that 5-7 minute stretch alone.
Well, the positioning and the compete level from the forwards defensively has been really strong the last few weeks, especially from the center position, but also Michael Pastajov on the wing. And I think we need to give the recognition to him, plus Lambert and Morgan. They're the fifth-year guys, mm-hmm. and I think all three of them are among Michigan's best 5 or 6 defensive forwards.
So Michigan does get the lead late in the first on I don't know, like a fluky goal, I guess, a lucky goal, a karmic or karmaic goal, however
put
you want to
say on net.
I mean, or don't even, because this was definitely not going on net. I mean, Mackie comes down the wing and
You know, it's going through the crease. It's not going to go on net, but it's thrown into the vicinity right in front of the net. And
yeah, I mean, but he's looking for Duke on the other side.
Right. But even if you don't, like, that's what they always talk about, right? Is that when you're along the wing and stuff, sometimes it doesn't hurt to just throw it in front, see what happens. And in this case, it's interesting because it's not a situation where it kind of donks off a guy. Like, I went back and looked last night. Don't ask me why, but I was rewatching the Frozen Four highlights against Notre Dame.
Nice. And as you are wont to do.
The second goal that Michigan scored, the Dexter Danks one from the corner, went off like the body of a Notre Dame guy and into the net who was standing right in front of them. I mean, similar circumstances, right?
Yeah.
Guy in the corner throws it to the net front area, it bounces in. But in that case, it just went off a guy's body. In this case, Kester was trying to play it. He was trying to push it aside and didn't do that. And
I mean, those are good hands. He got the puck high, got stick underneath it, lifted it really nicely. And I mean,
we need to check Mike Kester's Caesar Sportsbook app just to see if he had any bets down on the game.
Close is just like, what the hell, man? to 3 feet in front of me, and you're playing the puck over my shoulder. So Michigan gets the lead on that. And, you know, that kind of was like a, you could feel a little bit of the air come out of the balloon for the Minnesota faithful in the stands, because, you know, they had had some chances and they didn't really take advantage of them. They got the early goal, gave it away, had chances, didn't take the lead. And then Michigan gets a goal basically from a Minnesota defenseman. And you're just like, now we got to overcome this too. But
yeah. And then right after that, we have the first hit of really three hits in the game.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to get into this.
Where this one, they clip Moyle up high. And so that gives Michigan a power play for the remainder of the first period. And right before that happened, I was saying to you that Michigan needed to get out of the first period with a lead.
Yeah.
And they, as a result of that play, were kind of given a carpet to get out of the period with the lead. But that's an interesting one, because I don't actually know the rule. I mean, we've been litigating this all year long, and I still haven't had the interest to actually read the rule book.
Unless you're honest.
On 5 minute majors, because, you know, he comes in, he does hit Moyle up high, and you can tell he does because the helmet, which was clearly not strapped in very tight, starts rattling around like a bobblehead.
Yeah.
So it's pretty clear there's some degree of contact. Looked like the chin, basically. And a lot of people are like, oh, that's a major. And I'm like, I don't know, maybe. Well, we haven't seen a lot of those, right? What we have seen this year was mostly all situations where hit from behind, head first into the boards. We see that two times later in the game. That's been the most common thing. Or, yeah, you know, obviously the Beecher thing. That's been what most of them are. This one, we haven't seen a lot of those this season, where you have the kind of like marginal clip to the head as they're going by at full speed, all that sort of stuff. So I wasn't really sure if that was going to be a major or not, but they gave him 2 minutes for head contact. So
I think we're all just a little bit triggered because of all of the coin flips that Michigan gets go tails, and, you know, they get all these majors. So when there's a chance for them to actually get one in a positive sense, it's like, hey, are you going to call this both ways? This was the one of the three that I was like, like you said, I don't really know the rule, but the other two were like, hey, I've seen those called how many times this year? You better make this call. Anyway, so Michigan does get that power play. They get a great look on a phenomenal Hughes backdoor diagonal to Blankenberg, who's sitting at the back post and closes there and makes a save. And you thought maybe Blankenberg ran out of room a little bit. That's very easily true. I just, you know, I thought Michigan executed that as well as they could and close, kept the game close.
Yeah, it was definitely a nice look. No question about that. Just didn't get a lot of fiberglass on it.
Yeah, they don't score on this power play. They go into the second period, and then probably the smoothest play of the entire game, where Bortolo has the puck in the neutral zone and just makes a nice, sweet little pass to Samoskevich, who's starting to get out of the neutral zone and start heading into the offensive zone, crosses the blue line, creates a 2-on-1. Dukes on his right. He gets around the Minnesota defender by extending his stick and taking a different angle, and then gets the pass across, which is not the easiest sort of like just cross pass on a 2-on-1. And Duke, I thought, actually finished well with it too, because it was not just like right on his tape waiting for it, tapping it in. He had to kind of extend, got it in the air, and just tucked it inside the far post as close could not get across on that one. And it was 3-1, and now you're feeling even better.
Well, the angle to score on that goal was not great. You know, the close had played it pretty well, and he was moving at a pretty high rate of speed, Duke was, so it was going to have to be right on the money. And that goal, I think, was this week's version of Michigan being able to use the fact they have really good players to kind of just create goals off of decently harmless situations, right, where you just sort of pull it out there, and then, you know, Minnesota gets hit by the first pass from Bortolo, but even then, in the sort of 2-on-1 situation, Brinkman plays it pretty well, closes position pretty well. It has to be pretty good, right? It's a cornerback who's taken away most all of the window, but if the ball is thrown perfectly, it can still be caught by the receiver. And Michigan did that, where the ball is thrown perfectly, and I thought that happened last week against Notre Dame on the first goal Michigan scored in that one, where they go right through the teeth of the Notre Dame defense. It's not easy to do when you have to have about three pinpoint passes and they make it happen. That's what you hope this roster is able to do for you. And now it's happened a couple weeks in a row. So always a good thing to see. And it was kind of the idea of for my column this week, is that you can play it really well and you can have everything set up the way you want it to be set up, but at the end of the day, if the other team just makes a little bit better of a play, you know, you can beat them. And Michigan is able to beat some really good defensive teams the last couple of weeks in that way.
Well, and that's why you recruit these guys, right? I mean, that's where the star ratings do matter, as they say, because you can overcome structure with really good one-on-one play. And Michigan had about three or four really good one-on-one plays in a row. And, you know, there's just very little that you can do with that. I mean, then you need a great save from close, or you need a phenomenal play from, you said Brinkman played it well, but he didn't play it perfectly. And you need that little edge, and they didn't get it. So Michigan's up 3-1. And then we have the second of the potential majors. This one was, I didn't think that this was like dangerous. This wasn't like what the third one was going to be, but you know, Pass is hit from behind, and his head goes into the boards, and you can see it. There's a check from behind. He goes flying in, his head hits the boards first, and you know, it's 2 minutes. And at this point, it's 3-1 Michigan at Minnesota. I don't believe Minnesota had a power play in the game yet. If you call a major here, I mean, there is a chance you're ending the game, because if Michigan gets two, if they get one, they're in really good shape. If they get two, it's done. And I mean, this is, I did, when you watch this, it's by the rules definition, it's a major, and they didn't get it. It was a little frustrating. I don't know. I mean,
well, the game was functionally ended, even though it wasn't a major, right? Because Michigan gets the power play and they score on it. So yeah. Whatever. I don't know. It's one of those where I thought, based on the way the rule has been called this year, especially against Michigan, that it was going to be a major, or should have been. I don't know. But when it wasn't, I tweeted that I thought there was a chance that the Big Ten had told the referees that we don't want the game decided, you know, by major penalties, right? This is our big showcase game. It's on, I guess, national TV. Depending
and
on
apparently
if you consider
someone
BTN
told
a national channel, but
I mean, it is.
It's on,
I mean,
most,
you can get it in
cable,
like,
packages. Yeah,
yeah, you can get it in California.
Not sure if it's in Alaska, but
well, so this is where like the conspiracy theory comes back then a little bit, because it's like, you know, how does Michigan have all of these penalty minutes and blah blah blah? Well, you know,
well, you can also make the case, right, that it's like what we say when the game gets into overtime, where you say, well, there's not going to be another penalty unless it's something really obvious.
Sure.
And that one wasn't really obvious. The next one was. And that's kind of,
well, I think this one was obvious. It may not have been as drastic as the, I mean, if they don't call the next one, like, what are we even doing here?
Right. That's what I mean by really obvious. It's right. It's something where like, it's really, really bad.
Well, you tweeted that it was the worst hit of the year.
Well, the next one was. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. It seemed a little artificial. Like you said, it didn't matter because Michigan does score on it. They somehow, Brisson ends up at the point, which is interesting. And as the only guy back, which can be a little bit disconcerting if he's your one defenseman and you turn the puck over, but he hits KJ on the dot, who just snipes one past close again, not so great, moving from one side to the other. And it's 4-1. That's just another skill goal. I mean, you have these first round picks and they're going to play in the league for a reason. And this is the reason.
Well, it's also shot in the perfect position because it goes over close to shoulder, which is something we were talking about, aiming high against a 5'10 goalie. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of on the scouting report, and it's what ends up happening in this situation. So also, shout out Mark Estapa for the secondary assist. He's in the left circle. He has a nice pass that Brisson is able to then shovel across in motion. And so it goes left, top, right, gets the goalie sliding a little bit. And then Kent Johnson, not really been a goal scorer this year, but that was a snipe. And yep. Michigan goes up 4-1. And with the way they were playing defense in the game from that point forward, it was kind of over at that point. It didn't feel that way necessarily because there was a lot of game to go, but hindsight tells us it was over at that point because Michigan began to put the clamps on.
Well, yes, other than Eric Portillo, who on the in the next stretch, I don't even know how to describe this one. So he goes in the corner to get a dump in, and I think the puck comes off the boards a little more than he's expecting, and so the puck is farther than he's anticipating. His stick is going to be, and he tries to pass it behind his net. I hope not in front of his net, and it hits like the side of the net and bounces out into sort of the low slot slash circle area. And thankfully, a Michigan player is the first one there because that was a great example of how Michigan was going to lose this game. If they were going to lose it, it was going to be because of they're literally shooting the puck in their own net. And Portillo almost did. To me, we're late enough in his career and in his season that, like, look, he's going to play this way. Do we want him to never go retrieve a puck or to never try to play the puck? No, that's far gone, if you ask me. Be who you're going to be. Could he get burned on something like that? Sure.
Yeah, I
But
mean,
what are you going to do?
saying Portillo shouldn't play the puck is like being mad that a sidearm pitcher throws sidearm. Like it's who they are. Like you're trying to picture a horse without legs. And so
Dinner.
okay. Anyway, I what I didn't like about that play was it always gets a little nerve-wracking when you have, because the puck shoots out of the zone. You have the two defensemen who are they've got the lead in the race back to the other zone on the Minnesota guy, but they start slowing up because they know Portillo is going to come out to play it. But it always just makes me so nervous when the defensemen are falling, way high in the zone, and they're just expecting the goalie to get them there while there's their forechecker crashing down. Because if the forechecker crashes down and gets there first, or the goalie doesn't make the right pass, then the net's totally empty. I'd rather have one defenseman charge back two and then make the pass a little bit easier on the goalie. And then if the pass goes haywire, the defenseman is close to the cage to then kind of slide over there and give a little more help. Whereas that was just kind of a very dicey situation.
Yeah, like I said, that was exactly what Minnesota was going to need. They did not get it. They did not take advantage of it. And we all exhaled for a little while. Michigan does, or I'm just, Michigan, I guess you can go with that way, does take a penalty finally. And Minnesota gets their power play. But they don't
Nothing happens.
really do anything. They get like two shots, right? And both shots, you're kind of like, yeah, that's fine. Portillo sees it. It's from far enough away. This is going to have to be, a pinpoint laser shot in order to score. Neither shot is. And other than that, there was nothing dangerous at all.
Yeah.
So you get the almost gaff, you get the power play, the two things that you're going to need to get goals, and Michigan is just like, no.
Yeah, that's exactly the kill you want to get in terms of limiting the chances. And one shot was unscreened, or yeah, unscreened from the point right on Portillo. Sure.
The other note that I have, and I wrote this down basically twice, was I thought Samuskevich was really good in this period. He had a couple of opportunities where he's basically on a 2-on-2 or 3-on-3 and gets an entrance into the offensive zone, creates some space, and takes a dangerous shot. And, Close made those saves. Those shots can go wide, but that's sort of an example of a player who can just sort of, as you like to say, drive play, right? Where you're just like, you can get your own look. It's like a point guard that can shake a guy and get to the rim. That's what Samuskevich was doing. He wasn't lighting guys on fire by going by him all the time and getting a sort of a breakaway like Hughes has seen to do. But I mean, he got two really good shots from dangerous situations with more or less no help from anyone else against a team that is, loaded with drafted defensemen.
Samuskevich in that period, he has the one where he kind of rips it, and Close was sliding left to right, and he aims at left post, and it was a really good glove save. That was pretty close to being a fifth goal for Michigan.
And then the last note of the second period that I had was with under a minute to go, Minnesota finally registered their sixth shot of the second period. So Michigan tallies a couple of goals. They kill a penalty. They almost give one away. But throughout the entire time, Portillo's had to make six saves. And, that's just when you can get the lead like that and then just snuff out the opponent's offense. I mean, that's how you win tournament games. So into the third, they get back a little bit late and are zoomed in on, I don't even remember, and have to cut to the wide angle camera because Duke jumps a passing route and is in on a breakaway, and the puck just kind of hops on him a little bit and he can't get the shot off as clean as he would want. But so, I mean, there, you know, we talked about Samoskevich almost came up with a fifth goal. Duke almost gives him a fifth goal here, probably a lazy pass. We'd have to go back and break down if that pass should have been made, but Duke is made his mark this year, and especially as it's gone on, I believe he scored earlier. I think it was his ninth goal of the year. He's right up there in difference makers that Michigan is having, and he's doing it also against, you know, good teams like this. It's not like he's only doing it against Michigan State or Wisconsin.
Yeah. It just was a kind of a crazy play because they just come right back, you know, from the intermission, and they the period is starting, and all of a sudden it's like an uncontested shot on net, and you're just like, what?
Yeah. Someone fell asleep in the truck again.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like the period was maybe going on for 15 or 20 seconds.
Yep. Minnesota does get some shots because they do start to ramp up pressure. I have a couple notes on Portillo coming out. You thought he did a good job coming out to challenge shots and to cut down angles, and he did that about two or three times in the early part of this period. He's just, you know, all the little details are starting to fill in as, you know, we've noted that he does struggle with rebounds from time to time, and he still will give those up. But, you know, he's added some of these athletic saves. He's added like the kick saves and stuff. And when you can then use read plays well enough to come out and cut down angles using your size, I mean, it's just another thing that you're capable of doing. And it's even more confidence to feel in, you know, the guy that's going to have to be there if they're going to go far in the next couple of weeks.
Yep.
Now we get to the Claude Lemieux hit, as you would probably liken it to. I got a text from somebody who said that exact same thing. I remember the hit when I was a kid. You've probably watched it 100 times and then the fights ensuing. But so we talk about majors and dangerous stuff, and Michigan has hit some guys in the back and they've gone in the boards that are kind of dangerous. And that results in 5 minutes. These are the kind of hits though, that like, if you're really trying to protect people, when you're near the benches, like there's not the glass up top, obviously. So Pasta gets hit in the back and his face and neck go right into the top of the bench. And I mean, that should be not a major. That should be some sort of a suspension, not for being overly malicious, but I mean, we're talking about, that's a dangerous hit because of the severity of what can happen. Yeah, it's never good to go into the boards face first or ankle first or things like that. But this is like, I mean, this could be life altering. And to me, that's different than just a you know, check in the back and, oh, his head hit the boards, he could get a concussion, or he could, you know, like tweak his neck. This is like the guy's face could come open. If he hits himself in the neck, like he could have trachea problems.
Well, that's why they wear a cage. That,
well,
you know,
okay,
but that's a big
I mean, yeah,
that's a big difference between the Draper hit, right? The reason we bring up the Draper one is because it was the same place on the ice. It was right in front of the benches, and yeah, it's a high rate of speed. You know, I'll note that on the Draper one, Draper was kind of skating backwards and had his back turned for a longer time than Pastashov did, so I could, you know, maybe see a little bit of an argument that it was a little different in that way. But otherwise, yeah, like it is just not something that anybody should be doing, and is the sort of thing that I think can be cut out of hockey while keeping most of the other physicality stuff. And then, of course, you know, after it first off, the broadcasters during the first two hits, every time they were like, oh, no, that's not a major, that's fine. And then this one, they were like, oh, that's bad, this has to be a major. So at that point, you were like, yeah, that's where this is headed. So, and then after that is when the Minnesota fans start throwing things onto the ice, which
just like
you don't see that as much in hockey. I've seen that, you know, a decent bit in baseball. I remember there was that really bad call on the infield fly rule between the Braves and the Cardinals.
Oh,
in
yeah,
the NL wildcard game,
yeah,
like 10 years ago, where people were throwing stuff onto the field. But you don't see it as much in hockey.
Well, and it's like, if they would have done that, if they would have called a major on the Moyle hit from the first period, you're kind of like, all right, this is maybe a bit of an overreaction, but it might have been sort of soft. This is like the worst hit we've seen this year and the most obvious one. It's like when the children of Yost chant "Ref, you suck" after every Michigan penalty when, you know, Johnny Beecher winds up with his stick and hits a guy in the ear and they're like, that was terrible. You know, it's like, no, that's, he should probably not be allowed to play hockey anymore if you're doing things like that. And like, to get that revved up about this particular situation is like, come on, guys. Like, has nobody watched or played hockey before?
Right.
Apparently. This is your first game. Well, it was the first time they had 10,000 people. So maybe you had a bunch of first timers. But the interesting thing here is then, you know, Michigan gets, they have the 5-on-3, but they get a penalty after that. And so now, or so, yeah, it's a major. Now it's a 5-on-3 for, I believe it was over a minute and a half, but there's like 13-ish, 12-ish minutes left in the game. And so, you know, you and I are sitting there watching this just like, well, I mean, you don't need a goal. I mean, yeah, okay, it'd be good to score a goal, but the worst thing that you can do is, you know, kind of have a terrible pass that goes out of your zone and you give up a good chance. I mean, if you just skate around literally for the next 5 minutes, I mean, now you're down to like 8 minutes with a 3-goal lead. I mean, that's probably just as acceptable.
Yeah, you definitely, in this sort of game where you're up 3 goals, just want to wind the clock down. The time is so much more important than getting an extra goal.
And that's more or less what they do. There's a little bit of 5-on-3, and so they have a couple chances, but it's nothing where there looks to be a super sense of urgency. And then you kind of have Kent Johnson, who, as soon as the first penalty ends, Kent Johnson plays a no-look backwards pass into, well, the defender who is coming off of out of the box and trying to be the fourth player in the penalty kill, and he just passes it right to him because he's not looking. And then now you have a 2-maybe 3-on-1 going the other way, which Owen Power plays not so well either. And I mean, Minnesota should have scored here. There was a good shot. It goes maybe a foot wide. Portillo's late getting across, but I mean, it's a 3-on-1. What are you really going to do from that in tight? You just, one, you I can't, well, go ahead.
I wonder if Kent Johnson didn't hear Portillo, because normally, right, you have the goalie in the background banging the stick to try to signal when the penalty is ending. I'm not sure. Maybe he wasn't able to hear it because the stadium was pretty loud. I'm not exactly sure what the story was on that one.
Do you know what would mitigate that, though? If he was looking where he was passing.
Sure.
Like, if you take a look at where you're going to put the puck, you can know if someone's there or not. It's, I mean, if you can't do that, you're probably not playing sports, first of all. But that's just the thing about Johnson. You know, we try not to like rag too much. It's just that like there's too much of these and it's not necessary. And in this situation, it almost cost them a goal for no reason.
Yeah, it's neat to do the cool thing when it's useful, but it's not as fun when it's a bad idea.
Right. And like he makes too many of these basic passes more complicated than they need to be a lot of times, it seems to me. I mean, maybe I'm wrong and maybe I haven't played enough hockey and other people have maybe better opinions, and then that's okay. I just look at that and I think this just seems superfluous.
People can always use a little bit of simplicity sometimes.
Diplomatic Alex. So they do get out of this power play without giving up a goal, which is a weird thing to say because usually that's not how we're addressing this. But in these contexts, you know, with the lead, with the time left, you get down to 8 minutes. And then, you know, the clock watch sort of begins as they play more or less 5-on-5. And nothing really happens for like 5.5 minutes until you get to under 3. I don't even know if Minnesota got a shot. Maybe they got one.
Pretty much. There is a 26-minute stretch between when there was 8.5 minutes left in the second period to 2.5 minutes left in the game where Minnesota got 8 total shots. I mean, you do that across 60 minutes, you're looking at maybe giving up 18 shots. Like, that's Quinnipiac against Yale numbers in terms of shutting a team down, not, you know, against a team like Minnesota. So really good work. And then, you know, the ending, right? Michigan gives up a power play, and then they pull the goalie, and then there's another power play. But all that stuff is, it's so just weird circumstances, right?
Yeah. Like,
that's not something that I think is really applicable. And the truth is, for that next goal that Minnesota scores with 50 seconds left, they pass it around a long time, and they get the good look, and they get the goal. But then you need to get two goals in 50 seconds, which isn't the easiest thing to do. And then they do it again, where they pass it around and pass it around and pass it around and pass it around. And then finally, Nyes grabs it out of the air and kind of bats it in, which was a really nice play by him. But when that smoke clears on that one, there are 4.5 seconds left. And I think statistically, Minnesota should have just shot the puck on net more, because the time is so much more valuable than getting that look.
Yeah, sometimes in those situations, you're like, all right, if we can not let them score for 10 seconds or 25 seconds or whatever it is in those increments, I mean, that's just as good as keeping the puck out of the net, which is why, like, when I was writing a breakdown on it, I didn't even really address that they gave up those goals, because at that point, the only thing that's going to impact you is giving up three. And
well, the play-by-play guy is like, oh, is it over yet? When it goes in with 4.5 left.
Well, he's
it is. I mean, like, it's really, really hard to score a goal off a center ice face-off in 4.5 seconds if the opposing goalie is playing the game. Like,
what's the minimum number of seconds where you're concerned? 30? 20?
20. I mean, they can get a good look in 20. 10 seconds. There have been goals in under 10 seconds with a goalie there, but like, those are all situations where the other team is like not trying or isn't paying attention. Like, happen in a crucial situation. Those happen just like off a random face-off, and it's like, oh, the defenseman just fell asleep. I would say in that circumstance, probably 20 seconds.
Yeah, that seems about right. Somewhere in that range. I think 30 seconds, and I would be a little bit worried, because I feel like you could probably get a chance or two with a rebound tacked on, and that's where it gets a little bit hairy. But, you know, again, in this sense, you know, Michigan goes the better part of two periods up plural goals on, you know, a 2 seed, or had they lost this game, a 1 seed at their rink with a banner on the line. I mean, you just look at the last couple games, and that was the other thing, is, you know, Michigan sort of dominated Notre Dame in an old fashioned, physical, rough dump and chase, you know, not a ton of shots, but, you know, everything means a lot type of a game. And then they play this kind of a game that is wide open and flowing and shooting and skill, and they're just as dominant for pretty much the entire game as well. And that's the thing that makes me think going into the tournament, obviously you can get plinkoed and goalied and all that stuff, but like, I don't see a matchup as to where that Michigan would not be able to handle. They may not win the game, but it won't be because, like, oh, in 2018, we took 4 power plays and we can't kill a power play to save our life, or took 4 penalties and can't kill a penalty to save our lives, so we're going to lose.
Process looks pretty good right now, and I always think that's the most important part going into the tournament. You just want to be playing your game, and if you play your game, they'll probably win a lot.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458, or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
The Jamie Mack segment of the hockey cast, where we just look at the opposing conference tournament finals. Two of them we can kind of fly right through. In Atlantic, American International, who we'll talk about more in a bit when we break them down to whatever film we have on them, beat Air Force by a touchdown and kicked the extra point. 7-0. I don't think there's much to take from that.
I was hoping that somebody was going to pull through and beat AIC, because the other teams in that conference are a lot worse, which is saying something. But it didn't happen. And AIC played pretty well. They took care of business, and they're into the tournament. So congratulations to the Yellow Jackets.
Hopefully not for very long, though. The other game that was a good game and a high-level game, but is not overly relevant to Michigan right now, is Minnesota Duluth beating Western Michigan in the NCHC. I mean, this is just Duluth. What, they finished third in the conference, and then, oh, it's tournament time? We'll just start shutting everyone out.
Yeah, they playing really well right now. They were able to get by St. Cloud the previous weekend, and then they made it to the Frozen Face-Off, and once they were there, they played two extremely crisp games. They gave up a total of 0 goals on the weekend.
Against two 1 seeds.
Back-to-back shutouts for their netminder, Ryan Fanti. His save percentage is up to .926, having a very nice season. So, good stuff from Duluth.
And then we get to all the overtime fests that we had on. We'll end with the CCHA. So in Hockey East, UMass beats UConn like it's 1990s high-end college basketball. 2-1 in overtime for the Minutemen. UConn was trying to make a run to get into the tournament. I think if they'd won that, we probably would have gotten them.
I'm not sure about that. Let me pull up the pairwise. UConn was one. They finished tied in RPI with AIC. So if they had won that game, they would have jumped over.
So
AIC.
We would not have gotten them. The Huskies, I don't know that they've ever been to the tournament. I cannot recall in the time that I've been covering that they have.
So
UMass, obviously, Michigan has seen. They are not in Michigan's regionals, so we will not be talking about them as much at this time.
No, they have not made the tournament.
Good on the Minutemen for winning their conference. They won the national championship last year. Back it up with a conference tournament championship and a 3 seed, I believe, is what they ended up getting. The one that we were able to watch, because all the games are on ESPN Plus, is the ECAC, which was helpful to Michigan in several ways. One, because we got to see a little bit of Quinnipiac against Harvard. Two, because it knocked Ohio State out of the tournament, and it just even created more distance for Michigan from Northeastern.
Well, it really, by the time Harvard won, it was after the Michigan game had ended. So at that point, it really wasn't going to affect Michigan at all, because Michigan had the number one overall seed locked up. But it bumped Ohio State out, which is very funny and good content. So always appreciated. And Harvard's in as a 4 seed. They're going to be playing Minnesota State. We're not going to talk about that one till a little later, but interesting game. And that's not the team I would want to play in the first round of the tournament as the number 2 overall seed.
Speaking of Minnesota State, they win the CCHA tournament twice. In overtime, once as a fake, and the second time for real against Bemidji State. I think we were monitoring this because we did not want to charge Brian $30 just to watch this game, but I believe Bemidji had a 1-0 lead at over halfway through.
Yes, but the first two periods were pretty close in the shot attempts, if I remember correctly, and then the third period was just a runaway train. Yeah, it was 8 in shots on goal. It was 8-6 and then 8-8. But the third period was 14-5. So Minnesota State, they turned up the pressure. They got the tying goal in the late second period. We're trying hard to win it. They got it into overtime. They scored the winning goal. Then it wasn't.
Sort of.
And they came back later. We don't need to relitigate that, because anybody listening to this already knows about that. But
that's probably true.
No, and the good news is this helped out Northeastern, who were going to get bumped out if Bemidji had won. And it would have been very, very fascinating if Northeastern had been bumped out after that 90-minute fiasco, right? Like, that would have been the result. Bemidji would have gotten in, Northeastern would have been out, and you would have had a bunch of really messy NCAA deliberation about how to handle that. But I don't know why it took them so long to figure out that the goal was wrong. I mean, the video seemed crystal clear to me. So either the video was locked in the archives and they were searching for the key for 45 minutes to be able to access it, or I don't know.
I mean, the only thing could be they just didn't watch the video. Because if you watch the video and you pay any sort of close attention, you're like, wait a minute, something's wrong here.
Yeah, and I also don't know if that random guy who tweeted it was the first one to find it, or if he just was handed it. I'm not sure, but yeah, that's how it caught like wildfire, was some guy being like, whoa, look at this.
College hockey, everybody. All right, so that's what happened last weekend. What happens next weekend? We'll start with what's relevant for Michigan. Who or what or where, when is American International? Well, they've been in the tournament a couple times. Two, I think, in a row now. They were in last year and after getting massacred by North Dakota. I ran a few numbers on them. They were 20th in pairwise, which actually isn't too bad for
Pairwise thought Arizona State was a tournament team a few years ago. So we're going to take them with a hefty bag of salt.
But what I mean is, it's not like they're 48th in pairwise.
Yeah, like they're not. Well, let's use the KRATCH ratings. They're 26th there, which I 26. Think puts it in a little more perspective.
Okay. They're 21st in Corsi, which, again, that's, you know, borderline tournament team. That's good for them. Their power plays at 26%. That's really good. Penalty kills at 82. Again, not terrible there. They do have a drafted skater, which I was a little bit surprised on. I believe he's a seventh rounder, but and they have seven guys actually that are scoring greater than 0.75 points per game. So their production does come from a plethora of attackers. Their goaltending, yeah, it's average to below average, I would say. GAA is 2.43 and their save percentage is 0.91. But they're hot, right? They've won like five in a row, and
they've won a lot of games in their conference this year.
Yeah.
They, you know, American International, good for them. They have become the class of the Atlantic Hockey Association, which in the old days, I think Air Force was kind of the better team in that conference. But now American International has taken over. They made the tournament three straight tournaments going back to 2019, and they won the Atlantic Hockey regular season title in 2020. So if they had finished off their conference tournament that year and everything else hadn't happened, they could have been looking at four straight. So this is the cream of the crop in that conference at this point. So the problem is their conference is really bad and the teams they play are really bad. And when you look at the common opponents here, I mean, or just pull up the sheet, right? Like they lost to the worst Boston College team in a long time, 4-1. They lost to UMass, the team that Michigan handled pretty solidly at Yost, by scores of 5-1 and 4-2. They took Quinnipiac to overtime twice. Not sure what to say about that, but the other common opponent with Michigan is Niagara. So you have the UMass common opponent, which is not a great look for AIC, and then the Niagara one, which is also not a great look for AIC, because they won in overtime and then they lost in a shootout to Niagara, but they did not win in regulation in either game. And shot attempts at even strength were basically even between those two teams, whereas Michigan beat Niagara by scores that were very lopsided. And the shot attempts were even more lopsided. The scores were 6-1 and 4-1, and the shot attempts were something like 80-40 in both games. So what I'm trying to say is Michigan should outshoot AIC 80-40, and it's just a matter of their goals go in or not. If they do, this probably won't be very close. But if they don't, things get interesting, and that's how Atlantic Hockey gets you. They've beaten Titans before. They knocked off St. Cloud 2 years in a row. Air Force 1 year, AIC the next year. I think that's an indictment of St. Cloud more than anything else. But both times, it was 2-1 going to the empty net period of the game. They don't beat you 5-1. They beat you when you just stop scoring. And so if Michigan gets two goals early on, I think the game is pretty much over.
The interesting thing that I was looking at now is like going down their statistics of just specific players. Like they have a lot of like really high shooting percentages, like 19.8, 20, 18.6, 18.5, 24, 19.7. I mean, that's six shooting percentages that are way, way above average, right? I mean, like what, 10, 12 is probably a decent to good acceptable shooting percentage, and they have six guys that are shooting pretty close to like 20%.
Well, if you have decent shooters and you play in a conference that's really bad, that can happen.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not really sure what else to say in this situation. Michigan got the best possible draw of anyone that's going to make the tournament, especially that when you look at the 15 and the 14, which are Harvard and Northeastern. I'm not as sure about Mass Lowell, but American International is not going to have the talent as everybody else. They don't have that goalie that is that, you know, Northeastern does. They don't have the drafted skaters and the potential NHL talent that Harvard does. I mean, any way you look at this, Michigan should win this game. This is what they worked all year for, is to play in this particular game against this particular opponent, because it is as close to a sure thing as you will get in this tournament.
Yeah, I look at the AIC's main goalie, Jake Kucharski, something like that.
Kucharski, yeah.
Yeah, he had like an 880 save percentage in those two games against UMass. So, I don't know. Any goalie at any time can just go ham. So, it's only so useful to look at track record when you're predicting one individual game of goaltending. But
that's what we're given in this stupid tournament, Alex.
The thing that I'm hoping for is this to play out a lot like last year's game AIC in the tournament, where the number one comes in, they put up three or four in the first period, and the game is over. And it's a stress-free little coast into the next game.
So when I was like writing a lot of the tournament preview, the overall tournament preview, I do the little bit on Michigan's opponent, and that was yesterday. And I felt very hot takey because I was just talking about what Michigan needs to do against American. And I mean, you sort of touched on this a little bit on the MGO podcast where they need to care. Like you can't come out and like just skate like you're infinitely better than your opponent. You need to come out and play like you have the past couple weeks, and you need to attack, because like you were saying, you need to, like, you can't let this be a 2-1 game, you know. Get out early, get a couple goals, add one on later, or get out and get a bunch like North Dakota did last year and end the game. And then it's not really that big of a deal. And it's not far-fetched to see that happening. The problem is if you're going out there trying not to make a mistake and wait for the perfect shot and get too cute sometimes, and, you know, the goalie gets in rhythm, or you hit a couple posts and you start to get frustrated. I mean, like this, you play with a sense of urgency here, and you can't eliminate the threat of something going wrong, but you can kind of lower the odds of it, I think.
There's a scenario where Michigan scores a lot of goals in this game, because AIC gave up six to Mercyhurst, six to Canisius, five to Providence, five to UMass. Like, there is definitely a way this gets really out of hand.
And part of that is Michigan wanting to put it out of hand.
Yeah.
And not just going through the motions and looking ahead to the next game. But you do have to play this game. But if you do, unless the craziest of crazies happen, you should be fine getting to Sunday night.
Sunday afternoon. We're not sure if it's afternoon or
evening.
I think
it's at 6:30.
Oh, is it official?
Well, that's what College Hockey News has said the whole time.
Oh, okay. Evening.
Yeah. So Michigan also gets a pretty good draw on, I assume you're done with AIC.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the second game, assuming that they can methodically finish off American International, they draw Quinnipiac as the two and St. Cloud as the three. And when you look at sort of the glut between 6 and 12 or so, I mean, those are probably the two teams that you would pull out of that and say, yeah, I'll take those guys. Maybe UMass again, but
yeah, I would say Quinnipiac is definitely the weakest two, at least in my mind. Kiratch agrees, but it was really a dodge because last week when we were looking at this and we've been playing with the probabilities for so many weeks, we were constantly saying, oh, you know, there's a chance that it looks pretty good that they're going to have to play one of North Dakota, Notre Dame, or Duluth. I mean, last week it seemed upwards of 90% that one of those three teams was going to have to be in Michigan's region. Now, as it happened, pairwise wasn't wrong. Notre Dame was the team that was supposed to be in Michigan's region. They were the 9 in pairwise, which should have meant they were going to be the 3 in Michigan's region. However, it so happened that 7 and 10 were from the same conference, and they had to switch 9 and 10 to make that work. And as a result, Michigan gets the 8 and the 10 in pairwise, who happened to be Quinnipiac and then St. Cloud, which I'm very happy with because, you know, Quinnipiac, we kind of do-si-do'd around this with Brian on the other podcast. And, you know, he made the reasonable point that you don't want to play a team like Quinnipiac that has this goalie that's got an astronomically high save percentage. Here's what I'll say about that. I don't want to play Quinnipiac. I would rather play St. Cloud if I was picking the two teams here to see in the next round. But I'm a lot more skeptical of Quinnipiac relative to, say, Notre Dame, because Notre Dame has a team like 920-something save percentage playing one of the better schedules in college hockey, playing really good teams. Quinnipiac ain't played nobody, and that's been the case for a while. Like, their conference is really bad. The ECAC used to be a pretty good conference. I mean, Union won a national title 7 or something years ago. Yale did, I think, 8 or 9 years ago. There used
Clarkson's
to be.
Clarkson's made the tournament forever.
Yeah, there used to be good teams in that conference, and now there are not. They occupy a lot of the lowest rungs in the KRATCH ratings. Like, Yale is 58, Brown 57, Princeton 56, Dartmouth 55, Vermont 53. They played Holy Cross 52. I'm not sure if they're ECAC or Atlantic, but they were on Quinnipiac's schedule.
I think Vermont is Hockey East.
Okay, they did play Vermont too. They played Long Island, who is 54th, and they played them in the non-conference. St. Lawrence is 50. Union is 49. Like, that conference is awful. And when you break it down in terms of the kind of games that they have played, like, let's just take Yanov Peretz, who is the Quinnipiac goalie. Against the KRATCH top 20, he's got a 919 save percentage. Against teams in 21 to 40, he's got a 938. And teams 41 through 60, that rises to 969. So, again, and you look at their record, by the way, top 20, 3-3-2, 21 through 40, 6-1-4, 41 through 60, 20-0-1. So, they are a really mediocre team when they play the top rungs, and they give up a lot more goals. When they play the bottom of the barrel, which makes up over half their schedule, they just annihilate those teams. Those teams don't score any goals in any of those games, and shot attempts are like 80 to 40 in every game. It's just not fair, right? It's like, imagine if Michigan played 20 of their 40 games against Niagara, right? Like, you remember that Niagara, those Niagara games. Like, that's Quinnipiac's schedule.
I remember watching them play Michigan State, yes.
Yes, it would be. But Michigan State is a way better team than these teams. Michigan State's like 30th in KRATCH. These are like 58 in like unfathomably bad teams, and that makes up half their schedule. So you have to take it with a grain of salt. And also, their offense dries up in those top games. Against the top 20, they're only scoring 2.13 goals per game. So, yeah, if they beat Michigan, it'll happen 2-1 because they don't score against good teams. But I would also take Michigan's finishers against those teams. North Dakota put up 5 goals in 2 games on Quinnipiac, and they lost one of them because North Dakota's got a really bad goalie, and that sometimes falters on you, which doesn't happen in Michigan's case. So I think Quinnipiac is a paper tiger. I think that by playing a low event game, they can probably get their way to the Final Four, or Frozen Four, rather. I mean, it's very feasible when you play only 2-1 games. You can Notre Dame your way there, but they don't have the credentials in terms of playing the top teams the way Notre Dame does. And that's a critical difference for me. They also don't see many guys with NHL futures in their league. So those are kind of crucial differences. But also, they're rated lower in KRATCH than St. Cloud State. So, you know, we're not even sure if they're going to make it through to the next round.
Yeah. And when you look at the, like you've said, when you look at the positives of Quinnipiac and what they do well. Like, they're all defensive, right? I mean, it's like goals against, it's save percentage, it's penalty kill. Like, all those things are like preventing something from happening.
Well, and they do have a great Corsi 4 percentage. It's
inflated by the teams
you're playing.
And that's, I was going to say that, but I mean, their power play is still only 15%, and no one on their team really scores. I mean, their highest point getter is at 34 points in 40 games, so that's 0.85 points per game, and he has 9 goals, and he's a defenseman. So, like, it's not like they have the star that's going to come out and be like, gotta shut this guy down. I mean, they have a guy that has 15 goals in 40 games. Like, that's all right. And
yeah, I mean, for a few comparison, have 13. They scored 3.3 goals per game, which is tied with Notre Dame, except they did that against that schedule. Right. So that tells you a lot.
And I mean, there's, you know, they could be getting a goal or two early and then just saying, all right, well, you'll be lucky to get one. But
yeah,
I mean, it doesn't say a whole lot for when you're trying to go and knock off, you know, one, another two seeds. So St. Cloud is kind of the opposite, right? I mean, they have the number one power play in the country at 31%. Their penalty kill is a little lower at 82, but they have some talent, 5 drafted skaters, but they have 6 guys that are scoring over 0.75 points per game, double what Quinnipiac has. But then their goaltending is a little more wobbly, 2.26 GAA. And their save percentage for their goalie is 0.914. So good, but not elite, I guess.
Yeah, Michigan plays the 3 o'clock game on Friday. So this game will be taking place
9 p.m. Eastern time. 9 p.m.
Yeah, they're the late game. And that's the game I'll be watching, you know, with a bucket of popcorn. I'm very intrigued to see how that game unfolds, because it's really the oil and water matchup, right?
Yeah.
It's a team that hasn't played anyone against a team that's played everyone. It's a team that only can defend and can't really score against a team that can't really defend but can only score. And so it's the contrast of styles. And right, so there's a possibility that St. Cloud comes in guns blazing and they put 4 on Quinnipiac like North Dakota did in the one game. But it's also possible that they score 4, but they give up 5, which would be out of character for Quinnipiac, but possible, right? St. Cloud gave up a lot of goals to Duluth in the NCHC tournament. We should caveat that by saying apparently a lot of the players were sick for those games, but you know, take that for what it is. Brian pointed out on the show yesterday that there's a lot of really variable results with St. Cloud because they score so much and they don't really defend, that they are capable of beating teams up, but then also getting beat up themselves. And so, and again, you look at their numbers and you've got the 12-2 against St. Thomas, the 11-1 against Miami. And then on the flip side, right, you got the 5-8 loss to Denver and the 1-7 loss to North Dakota. Like, they play some wacky, very high event games. I mean, if they beat Quinnipiac 2-1, I'll be pretty impressed. I don't think that's the kind of game St. Cloud State normally plays.
No,
but they're battle tested. They come from a really good conference, although they're not very good in that really good conference. Take that for what it is. They've been in the tournament a lot. They haven't done very well, as we mentioned in the AIC segment. They've had a tendency when they were a higher seed to just do terribly and leave the tournament very early, but that's different. They're not playing the fearsome Yellow Jackets from Springfield, Massachusetts. They are playing the benign Bobcats from Hamden, Connecticut. So we'll see how that goes. But I just want Michigan to play St. Cloud because they're going to play a way Michigan wants to play. And
yeah,
the way that St. Cloud plays really hinges on, number one, how much do you score? And number two, how well does your goalie do to, you know, prevent the A-plus chances against? And I'll take that kind of game in which my team has the better scorers and the better goalie.
Yeah, I am not overly concerned playing with either one of these teams, but I think that to try to get into a track meet with Michigan is probably not going to go well. You could do it, but if you do not play good defense against Michigan, I mean, they're capable of putting in 10.
Yeah, and in this, look, this bracket, by the K-Ratch, they've got about an 86% chance to beat AIC, maybe a little generous to AIC, but that's the way the numbers see it. And then about 70-30 to beat either of these two teams because they're so similar in those numbers. And so if you do the combined probabilities, you're looking at Michigan entering the weekend at about a 60% chance to make the Frozen Four.
I mean, that's going to be higher than
any
other. Right?
Yeah, it's going to be higher than any other team in the country. So it's all you can ask for. And now you got to go out there and play those games. I mean, your hope is you show up with the bazooka and you just blast AIC right out of the first period. And then you coast into Sunday. And then it's just a matter of, like we said last week, right? Can you beat one team you're definitely better than? And if the answer is yes, then you're going to the Frozen Four.
Where they will take on the winner of the Loveland region, I believe, which is going to be Denver, which, okay, obviously they were sent there and became a one despite losing in the NCHC semifinals because Minnesota did not beat Michigan. The two is old good friend, the Sorcerer Magician's Minnesota Duluth. The three is Alex's personal rival in Michigan Tech. And the four is Mass Lowell, which the only relevant thing that I can think of with them is I was interested in Michigan poking around their head coach right before they hired Mel.
The Riverhawks, right?
Riverhawks.
Yeah, they played basketball at Chrysler a few years ago.
They did. That's true. I mean, this to me, this feels like chalk in the first two rounds. Denver is really good. They have good numbers. They have a lot of drafted skaters. They have a lot of people that score. Their goaltending isn't amazing. And their penalty kill is suspect. But, I mean, they just have a lot of guys. Lowell is more of a defensive team. In a road game, I probably like Denver. And then I'm the one that believes in ghosts, right? I can't pick against Duluth. That's just, who they are.
This is the region that I'd be very surprised if one and two don't play because I don't see anything really redeeming about Lowell, but I also haven't really paid attention to the Hockey East because that's a scrub conference that's not worth thinking about this year. They don't have any good teams. So
yeah,
I've been tuning them out, but I mean, Denver was very clearly the third best team in the country, like throughout the year where you had this 1-2 of Michigan, Minnesota State, and then Denver poking around right behind. So I think very highly of them and they've got the home ice and all that stuff. And I don't know about Michigan Tech. We don't need to get into that, but all I know about them is that they did not beat a Michigan team missing all of the players. So, and they play in a not very good conference, and Duluth plays in a great conference, and Duluth is a great team and is on fire, and the goalie's playing well and all that stuff. So I think Denver and Duluth will meet in the regional final, and that'll be a fascinating game because they just played last Friday night. It's the top offense in the country in Denver against a team whose goalie's really clicking, and they play really well defensively, and Duluth claimed the first round of postseason play between these two teams on Friday, and we'll see what happens a second time.
Had Michigan lost to Minnesota, they would have been the 2 seed and most likely headed to Albany, where Minnesota State is now because Michigan did win. So Minnesota State is the 1 in Albany. And then you get the NDs. North Dakota is the 2, Notre Dame's the 3, and then Harvard is the 4. So this is like, I mean, I think I wrote down in the preview that I said, every time I look at this regional, I pick a different winner. I mean, I think that Minnesota State is probably the best team. They've been going neck and neck with Michigan all year for that honor in the country. But they draw Harvard, which is like, oh, we get an automatic qualifier. And then that automatic qualifier has 11 drafted skaters and 6 skaters scoring over 7.75 points per game. The goaltending isn't great, but it's not terrible. And I mean, they have like a first round pick. They also are top 10 in Corsi. I mean, and this is like the automatic qualifier that you get as the 15 overall.
Yeah. You look at, this matchup and Harvard. What's tricky about this for Minnesota State is that they're playing a team. They're the 1, the other team they're playing is a 4. And yet the four has got a lot better players in terms of NHL talent, right? Minnesota State, not really an NHL talent feeder school. Harvard has Matthew Coronato, who was a first-round pick in the lottery of Calgary back last year, and he had a great game in the ECAC tournament. You've got Nick Abruzzese, who will probably be signed by the Maple Leafs whenever Harvard's run ends, and was in the Olympics. He also had a four-point night in the ECAC tournament, I think, in the Friday game. And then Sean Farrell's on that line, too, was really good. And all three of those guys were Chicago Steel products, where they played with Power and Samuskevich and all those guys. So Harvard's got some dudes. They've also got Thrun on the back line. He was a third-round pick, so a lot of players that Harvard has, and they haven't played super well, but they were kind of the sleeping giant team in the ECAC, the only kind of respectable team, maybe Clarkson in that league besides Quinnipiac. And if you're Minnesota State, you would have preferred the bid stealer to be Bemidji.
Yeah.
Or a caliber of team like that, right? UConn, somebody like that, not Harvard.
They probably would not have played Bemidji.
Have played Bemidji, but that's the kind of team you would have liked to play.
Right.
You would have liked Colgate, Cornell, someone like that.
The other game is the Battle of NDs. I mean, we know all about Notre Dame. We've discussed them way too many times for my liking. NODAC is not maybe traditional NODAC. They still have the drafted skaters. They don't have all of the superpower individual stars. I think there's only three, and it's debatable if Sanderson's going to play. He did not play last weekend. Their goaltending is arguably the worst in the tournament out of all the teams, and their penalty kill is actually under 80%. So this feels more like not a terrible matchup for Notre Dame. And when NODAC gets Notre Dame, I mean, you just never want to draw Notre Dame in these situations, right? Like, it's not saying they're going to never lose a game. It's just, it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be fun. It's going to be like you're going to be spinning in circles. Maybe you win the coin flip, but honestly, I'm probably leaning Irish in this one.
Well, you know what North Dakota sounds like? 2018 Michigan Wolverines. shaky goaltending and bad power or penalty kill.
Yeah, and plenty of talent.
But North Dakota, look, they have been one of the hottest teams in the second half. They got out a little flat. They lost twice to Cornell, which is really weird. They lost to Western twice. And then after that, they were gangbusters the rest of the way until they came out a little flat against Western in the NCHC tournament. But they tied Denver for the share of the conference title in the toughest conference in college hockey. So North Dakota didn't get here for nothing. And they're a talented team. And look, Notre Dame could beat anybody at any time. Like,
yeah,
they could probably beat an NHL team on the right day. Not very often, but on the right day, if everything goes right, they could probably pull one off. Like, they just know where to be. And if the goalie goes on fire, you know, it is what it is. I'm not sure. I think it's a pretty clear coin flip between those two teams. And then they play Minnesota State. Minnesota State would be favored if they get past Harvard, but that's not an easy game. I mean, I think there's a lot of variables here in this bracket. And if Minnesota State were to go down, I think then at that point, Michigan becomes the runaway favorite for the tournament if Michigan is still standing.
Yeah, these are the other Friday games, I believe. These are two games that if you can watch, probably not a bad idea. That's going to be two interesting games, probably two evenly matched games. I probably in the end lean a little towards Minnesota State just because they do have McKay. They do have a couple guys that can score. They've won a lot. They're tournament tested. They're there all the time. I mean, I know we can say that for
those are Thursday games.
Oh, they're Thursday. Okay. So they're Thursday. So
Worcester is the Friday.
Worcester's the Friday. Yeah. Anyway, I probably lean Minnesota State coming out of here, but honestly, if anyone else did, I would not be shocked. Last regional, Worcester. They're the Worcester. This is the one is Western Michigan, then Minnesota, Massachusetts, and Northeastern. And this is another like loaded bracket. And you get another like four seed. Well, first we'll start with Western Michigan. They were the team that, you know, has what wants another shot at Michigan after like the ducking incident, even though the teams did play.
They're foaming at the mouth.
You foaming at the horse's mouth. The they did play two earlier times in the year. Michigan got their clocks cleaned 4-0 and then won in overtime at Lawson in Kalamazoo. But, you know, they're very senior heavy. They're big, they're physical. The only two drafted players, goaltending is not exceptional. Power play is good, 25%. Penalty kill is 82. All right. Corsi's at 13. They're just a good, experienced, not quite as good version of Minnesota State, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, along those lines. They're a good team, and they deserve to be a one seed. They, however, are not at all a sure thing to come out of this region. They play Northeastern first, and look, Northeastern, they want to share, or maybe outright, the Hockey East regular season title, but they're not very good. They have a really good goalie, Devon Levi, and they don't have much else besides that. But that profile is always ripe for upsets, so we'll see what happens in that matchup. And then Massachusetts and Minnesota. Look, UMass, defending champions, not the same team as last year, but still some carryover guys, and they've got a lot of players, and they've got a lot of, you know, a lot of talent on that team still, and they're the one team in Hockey East who did play a, you know, a decently competitive non-conference schedule. And so they're battle tested, and we know what Minnesota is. They're a good team. I could see any of these four teams making the Frozen Four. And here's the unfortunate side effect of the way this very dumb tournament goes. The two higher seeds in this regional are going to be heavy road teams in these two games. They're playing two Massachusetts teams in Massachusetts, and the higher seeds are from very far away. So that could play a factor, and I think it'll be interesting to watch. But, you know, I'm hoping for chalk here in the same way I'm hoping for chalk in the, you know, the Denver Duluth matchup. Just from a hockey standpoint, just I would love to see those games. I think these are great teams, and it would be fun to watch the really great teams play each other, but that's probably not what will happen.
No, I could see one of these teams losing. I mean, like you said, Western's probably a much better team than Northeastern, but they have that goalie. And I mean, yeah, it's one game. He could give up six and then it doesn't even matter. But you just, this is the team. Northeastern is the team that you and I talked about wanting to avoid in the 1-4 matchup. And it's kind of funny that Michigan finishes the number one overall seed, gets
because AIC they didn't play that game.
Well, if that was the one that versus game, two, right?
Yeah. If they had won the game against Western, they would have been number one. But if they had lost it, they would not have been. So that's why this is truly the funniest timeline.
And then Western gets the three, and they draw the goalie of the year.
So a closing thought on this bracket, looking back at time, last year was a fake tournament, by the way. In terms of history, because they didn't use pairwise, there wasn't an ability to use K-Ratch either because no one played outside their conference. So the seeds were all mixed up, and then some of the games didn't even happen. Like, it was a fake tournament. We're just going to be frank about that. And so going back from 2013 to 2019, every year at least two 1-seeds made the Frozen Four. And in 13, 14, 15, 17, and 19, a 4-seed made the Frozen Four. So the 3-seeds actually were the most unsuccessful seeds. 4-seeds made it very consistently. 1-seeds made it very consistently. There was often a 2 every year. Very rarely, 1 3-seed in a 7-year period of the tournaments made the Frozen Four. So,
well, if you were told that 1 4-seed will make it this year, who would you pick?
Either Northeastern or Harvard.
I'm probably going Harvard. So, because you got to win 2 games, right? It's not just 1. And I mean, sure, Levi can steal 2, but like, I wouldn't be surprised if Northeastern beats Western Michigan, but then are they also then going to beat, say, Minnesota? I mean, that's a tough task, beating those two teams. And I mean, geez, that's what, 2 essentially top 5 teams in 3 days. That's pretty good. All right. Well, hopefully we're back next week to talk about happy things and not an upset and figuring out a way to piece this together without hanging one more banner, at least a Frozen Four banner. Any other overall thoughts on the tournament? Or we went through pretty much everything.
If Michigan does not make it through Allentown, it will be a really big disappointment.
Yeah, on a number of levels, I would agree. I think they finally got the draw they wanted. They got the team they wanted. I mean, stars are aligning.
They have now a good goalie for the first time in a while in a tournament run.
In a tournament run, yeah. And now it's just time to win the games.
Thank you for listening to Michigan HockeyCast 4.21. Come back next week as Alex Drin and David Nasternak will talk all about the Frozen Four or nothing about the Frozen Four and find out which.